It's May Day. That means that this is the first show of the new season of Three Things. The show, both the vintage season from a million years ago and this new season, can be found on most podcast apps and platforms now, including the original homepage, because I'm loyal like that, at threethings.podomatic.com. I'm freaking thrilled that you've joined me today, and I hope you find this collection of things, including dinosaur lips, screaming vegetation, and itty-bitty doctors with itty-bitty needles, as interesting and eye-opening as I have. Let's get started, shall we? So, here's a crazy thing. It's thing number one today. And it's the thing I remember wondering about as a kid watching claymation movies and the like. Why were T-Rex's teeth always hanging out in that menacing way? And how were his teeth always so nice? Most animals that I could think of at the time had lips over their teeth. You remember curling up your lips, your teeth would get all dry and it would feel all weird and stuff? I hope that wasn't just me that did that. I still do it. I'm pretty sure it was taught to me by an older sibling or three, you know who you are. So I'm not the only idiot. Anyway, this exact question, which has long plagued the scientific mind, is did dinosaurs have lips? Well, now there may be as definitive an answer as we may ever get. This pressing question joins others about T-Rex in particular, questions like, were they more hunchy than previously thought? Were their tails bigger? Could they even actually really run? Since what we know of dinosaurs mostly comes from bones, it's kind of hard to be positive about soft tissues like luscious lips, or far more probably, scaly ones. To find the answer to this question, a paleontologist at Auburn University in Alabama, a guy by the name of Thomas Cullen, figuring that recent depictions which had big old tooths sticking out of T-Rex's jaws, even when their mouths were closed, just didn't make no damn sense, so he did a study. He said that, quote, this pattern of portrayal largely had to do with relatedness between dinosaurs and crocodilians and the relationship between tooth and jaw size, end quote. Comparing skulls from living reptiles and dinos, however, he found this simply wasn't the case. Like monitor lizards, for instance, still fit their teeth, which comparatively are larger than a T-Rex's in their respective faces, behind a set of scaly lips. The wear and tear patterns on the surfaces of teeth also gave clues in the study. Take a crocodile, for instance. Their teeth do stick out because they ain't got no lips, and so they show lots of wear. Quote, like someone's taken a sander to the side of the tooth, unquote, said Mark Whitten, a paleo artist at the University of Portsmouth in England and co-author of the study. When a tooth from a close relative to the T-Rex, a Despletosaurus, was inspected, they found it to be in great condition and it didn't show the sort of uneven damage a crocodilian tooth will. Mark Whitten thinks that, quote, it is time that we have a big shakeup of what we think these dinosaurs look like in wider culture, end quote. Because there's not enough drama in the world already, Mark? Ugh. He also says that, quote, we've really put some new data on the table that I think makes it now pretty indefensible to have the goofy-looking theropods with their teeth hanging out, end quote. Adding lips to a dinosaur might make it look a little less scary, but it is more realistic. He also said, quote, you don't really see a monster, you see an animal, end quote. So in conclusion of thing number one for today, here's what I learned. It looks like theropods like Tyrannosaurus rex had lips. Even in a wide open bite, they didn't stick out much. You might see just the tips. And now, one of my favorite things to do on Three Things, the GWOD, or Grandiloquent Word of the Day. But I'm totes doing five, count them, five words today. It's my show, I can do that if I wanna. and they all begin with the letter A. The lovely and talented words presented for your verboraceous consumption today are alien eloquent. It's an adjective. It's pronounced alien eloquent, and it means tending to digress from the point of one's conversation or discursive. Eolist. It's a noun. It's pronounced E-O-list, and it means a pompous person pretending to have inspiration or spiritual insight. Altisonant. It's an adjective, pronounced altisonant, which means highfalutin, high-sounding, lofty, pompous, you get it. Agelastic. It's an adjective. It's pronounced agelastic. It means not jovial, one who laughs not, a non-laugher. And last but not least, in any way, shape, form, or fashion, is Abderian. It is an adjective. It is pronounced Abderian, and it means given to laughter, inclined to foolish or incessant merriment. All things I like. In a sentence, drumroll please. While I may sometimes be perceived to be an alien-eloquent eolist, and even perhaps a bit altisonant, it is always and only in an effort to convert any age-elastic persons out there to Abderian, even if only for a moment. So, thing number two for today is a very serious question. Did my fucking salad just yell at me? Screaming plants. Yep, serious things. Plants make noise. It's not really a scream per se, though. They actually make clicks and pops in ultrasonic frequencies that we humans can't hear. Like when they're stressed, according to scientists, plants communicate that stress to the world. A few years ago, some researchers realized that plants can detect sound. So the next step in logic would dictate that they might be able to make sounds as well. Evolutionary biologist Lila Khadani, I hope I said that right, it's a lovely name, from the Tel Aviv University in Israel, now says that, quote, even in a quiet field, there are actually sounds that we don't hear. Those sounds carry information. There are animals that can hear these sounds, so there is a possibility that a lot of acoustic interaction is occurring. Plants interact with insects and other animals all the time, and many of these organisms use sound for communication, so it would be very suboptimal for plants to not use sound at all. We already know that plants aren't as passive as it seems when they're under stress, and plants get awfully stressed sometimes by insects or water stress or even animals that they don't want to be eaten by. I'm looking at you humans. When a plant is stressed out, it can have some pretty dramatic reactions. They can make themselves stink or change their shape or color, even act dead like the Mimosa pudica, also known as the sensitive plant, which when touched folds its leaves and droops as though it had died, and therefore might not be as tasty as the yummy green plant next to it. Changes like this also communicate to nearby plants that danger is near, signaling those plants to boost their defenses or even bring animals to themselves to take care of harmful pests. In order to find out if plants were saying things, tomato and tobacco plants were recorded in a bunch of differing conditions, starting with a baseline recording of plants who were feeling pretty chill and had no stress, man. Then plants which were stressed by thirst and, get this, having their stems cut, so stabbing plants, vegetarians, they made noise when they did it. The first recordings took place in an acoustic chamber and then in the regular environment of a greenhouse. Recordings in hand, researchers then taught a machine learning algorithm to find any differences in the sounds made by happy plants, thirsty plants, and plants that had been cut. Still looking at you, vegetarians. Now, it's not like the plants screech like a chick in a horror movie. No, it's more like clicking and popping noises. Here's the thing. Unstressed plants don't say much at all, screaming, popping, or otherwise. They just hang out and chillax quietly being a plant. Plants under some sort of duress make tons of noise, some species making as many as 40 clicking noises per hour. It seems rather talkative for a plant, to my mind. Still though, unknowns abound. Like, it's not super clear how these sounds are made by the plants. Previous studies would suggest that dehydrated plants experience cavitation. That's air bubbles forming within the stems and expanding and collapsing, kind of like when we humans crack our knuckles, which mom said don't do. Of course, whether other plants or animals are sensing and responding is not yet known for sure. We also don't know if other distressing conditions can make a plant start popping. Attack, too much UV, pathogens, extremes in temperature, and other bad conditions might also get those plants to talking or hollering their leaves off. The next logical question would of course be, who is listening? I'm pretty sure it isn't vegetarians. I'm just saying. It seems to me that plants might already be learning the art of self-defense, like the Gimpy Gimpy plant. It has the honor of being the most painful plant on Earth to interact with. Every single surface of the giant stinging tree, as it's also known, is covered with very small silica hairs, which act like tiny little bastardy hypodermic needles, which inject a neurotoxic venom, kind of like spider venom, which then causes immediate, long-lasting, excruciating pain. Another plant which has taken itself very, very seriously is the rosary pea. The seeds from the rosary pea are often used in rosaries, hence the name, and other jewelry. This is completely insane though, because while an intact seed is no problem, one that is broken or scratched or even chewed, don't know who'd do that, can be lethal. To kill an adult human, it would only take 3 micrograms of the rosary pea's neurotoxin, it's called abrin, and that's less than what is found in one single seed. Abrin is a lot like ricin in that it prevents protein synthesis within living cells, and that can cause your organs to fail inside just a few days' time. So not only can the rosary pea kill you, it does it slowly and painfully. That kind of seems only fair, really. We kill plants all the time. Looking at you vegetarians again. Anyway, there's that thing number 2 for today. Watch what you eat has a new meaning for me. It's not going to stop me eating what I want, me being a happy omnivore and all, but I will absolutely wonder what my food might say to me. Hey, so real quick, what is this sound? I bet you nobody gets it. Let me know in the comments or email me at 3thingspod@gmail.com. I'll totally shout you out if you guess it. I'm literally dying for someone to guess it. I may make this into a contest. That'd be fun. I got 1 million of these. And now for the TDIH, this day in history. May Day, celebrated on May 1st, boasts a long history. Through all of those years, there have been all kinds of festivities and celebrations all over the world, most of which had to do with the coming of spring. The Celts of the British Isles believed May 1 to be the most important day of the year, when the festival of Beltane was held, it marked the division of the year in half between the dark and the light. Then the Romans came to the British Isles and decided that Beltane time was also a good time for their particular take on the springy time of year, and began celebrating Floralia in worship of their flower goddess, Flora. A maypole is an interesting facet of May Day celebration and goes back to times medieval. A large pole would be set up so that everyone could grab a ribbon and dance around and make merry, and it's thought by some that the pole itself was a symbol of male fertility, and the wreaths and baskets of flowers, the female fertility. This, of course, was an affront to the Puritans and the good old brand new USA, so the maypole thing never really caught on. Although for a while there, May Basket Day was a thing where flowery baskets and candies and the like were hung on the doors of loved ones, neighbors, and friends. That sounds lovely. Oddly enough, though, now May Day is barely even recognized in the USA, where it began its officiosity. But it is celebrated in many other countries across the world, some 66 of which count it as an official holiday. In case you wonder what the hell May Day has to do with the internationally recognized murder, murder, murder express call, well, it ain't got a damn thing to do with it. That distinctive trouble-signaling radio call comes from a 1923 challenge to London Airport radio officer Frederick Mockford. He was challenged to come up with a word or phrase that could be readily understood over the air in case shit hit the fan and a plane or ship needed help. Good old Fred came up with Mayday, saying it was not only clearly heard even over long-range radio, but that it also sounded like a short version of the French phrase Venez m'aider, which means come and help me. Mayday. So as far as someone born on this day in history, I'm picking Miss Martha Jane Canary, also known as the frontierswoman Calamity Jane, famous friend of Wild Bill Hickok. She was generally thought of kindly, in spite of her being a fighter of Indians, as they put it in those days. She died at the tender age of 51 of pneumonia. As to someone who died on May 1st, I'm going with Scotland-born physician and explorer David Livingstone. He was super popular in Victorian Britain, hailed as an advocate of commercial empire, an anti-slavery crusader, explorer, scientific investigator, and missionary. It was his famous meetup with H.M. Stanley which birthed the ever-popular quote, Dr. Livingstone, I presume? He died on this day in history, May 1, 1873, of, it's thought, from malaria and internal bleeding from dysentery. I guess that's what all that fancy world traveling with no medical care might have got you way back then, or even in today's world, for that matter. An interesting event from May 1, many years past, 1840 to be exact, was the issuance of the Penny Black, the first prepaid adhesive postage stamp to be used in a public post system. This cut out a lot of travel and annoyance it used to take to post a letter. The stamp boasted a lovely profile of the very young Queen Victoria. The Penny Black, and later other stamps, allowed delivery of letters weighing up to half an ounce, and regardless of how far away they were going, for just one penny. Now look at postal rates. Ugh. You've probably heard the quote, you may fire when you're ready, Gridley, right? Well, that happened on May 1 in 1898 when U.S. Admiral George Dewey commanded it as the U.S. routed the Spanish fleet at Manila. The planet Pluto was officially named on May 1 in 1930 by an 11-year-old girl named Venetia Burney. And that lasted about 76 years until, bam, no more Pluto for you. Just like that. Yeah, I'm still butt wounded over it. In 1939, the Batman made his first appearance in Detective Comics number 27. In 1776, the Illuminati, a secret society that everyone knows about, was founded by Adam Wieshaupt. But, you know, shh. And thing number three for today is a whole new way to get treatments administered to only where treatments need to go, specifically the bad cells that make us sick. Thanks to bacterial nanosyringes made to target specific human cells, more effective and safer treatments could be available for not only cancer, but a wide range of other conditions. See, when we swallow a pill, the molecules in that pill are diffused through the blood into the cells. The problem with that delivery system is that those small molecules can enter any cell, including the ones that don't need entering. That's one of the reasons the treatment can seem to make one feel worse because of the unwanted side effects that they list, like on the commercials for like 10 minutes. Those. Large molecule proteins can give a much more powerful and specific effect than small molecule drugs, but they can't cross the membrane of a cell to get inside. Finding a way to get larger proteins into specific cells would be much more effective and even lead to completely transformative treatments in, hopefully, the near future. Here's the thing. Bacteria have already solved this problem, as a lot of bacterium are able to create cylindrical structures which attach to cells and then forcibly inject their contents into the cell, much like a syringe. These tiny syringes look like the phage viruses that commonly infect bacteria, and are probably like that because the bacteria co-opted the viruses and weaponized them. One bacteria in particular, the Photorhabdus bacteria, infects insects by releasing nanosyringes loaded with toxic proteins. If we can mimic that binding and injection, and the targeting of the bad cells, of course, medicine would be much more effective at killing the killers. There's a whole lot of twiddling about and suitable proteins to discover and little syringes to create, but the research goes on and it looks quite promising. Being able to kill just the cancer or other naughty cells while leaving the rest of the body alone and healthy and side effect free is on the horizon. It just needs a little more time, and I hope I'm around to see it. I too just need a little more time. Speaking of time, it's time to end this thing number three for today. So that's three things for today. I hope you enjoyed stuff about dinosaurs, maybe learned a thing or so about plants having something to say, or even got inspired in some way, like those very smart researchers were inspired by the smallest among us. If you smiled or even laughed, then I have met my goal for this day. Be sure and have a guess at that crazy sound. I will be stunned if anyone guesses it, but I'll be so proud if someone does. Please join me next week for another episode of Three Things, wherever you get your podcast. Three Things is available now on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Google, iHeart, and many others. Yay! Or just go straight to the original OG homepage of the show, threethings.podomatic.com. That's the number three, the word things.podomatic.com. But in the meantime, go ahead and look into any nearby mirror, reflective surface, whatever, hubcap, doesn't matter. Find your face. Look yourself straight in the eye. Forgive whatever you feel you might need to forgive in yourself. And be happy. Good day now.